Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Blood Games with Jake Ramsey. Last week we read, when the Suburban turned onto a lane of one of the mansions, Chris pulled to a stop 50 feet back from the gate. I had not commented on her driving skills, but I was sure that we had been spotted. I had not said anything because it was my fault as much as hers. I was the one who knew how to follow a vehicle while reducing the risk of being spotted, and I hadn't thought to say anything until I realized it was too late. My mind had been on other things. The more I had thought about it, the more concerned I became it had been too easy. I might have been able to buy us stumbling onto Reed's location once, but twice? In the same night? No, my paranoia had kicked in. We were headed into a trap. I opened my door. What are you doing? Chris asked, her voice a hiss. I'm going in, I said. Don't wait for me. Head to the office. Drive like you're being followed, because I'm certain they know we're here. Without waiting for a response, I hopped out and slung my bag over my shoulder. A moment later, I jumped the gate. And now, episode 18. Things were quiet on the other side, but I came down expecting to shoot almost as soon as I landed, thinking for sure there would be guards. As I spun with my pistol in hand, looking for trouble, I spotted what I thought was a camera and was halfway to it before I realized it was a burned-out light. After closer examination, I was left wondering why I had thought it was a security camera because it looked nothing like one. Shaking my head while taking a deep breath to calm my nerves, I ducked behind a tree while I waited for Chris to leave. I had not given her an opportunity to argue and had made sure to not look back. She was left either doing as I suggested or getting out herself, something she was unlikely to do. Despite her boldness, it was apparent she was not trained for this sort of thing. Clandestine meetups, with a set agenda and a controlled situation she could handle, but walking into an unknown situation was not something she should do. I'd thought her more experienced when I requested she accompany me. I should have taken Maxine up on her offer to send me with her more seasoned person. I had made some assumptions about Chris and had learned the truth the hard way. That's why I had put her in a position where she was forced to leave. I did not want to risk her life if I could avoid it. If I continued to accept Maxine's help, I would try to keep Chris back at base where she belonged. She wouldn't see it that way, but she also had not realized the risk she had taken by parking so close to the Data Raider headquarters. What other mistakes would she make? When the SUV pulled away, I let out a sigh of relief, glad she was gone. I doubted she would return to base as I suggested, but my quick actions would at least force her to take refuge while she came to terms with what I had done. She was going to yell at me the next time she saw me. The thought almost made me smile, though I had not intended this to be payback for her forcing me to meet Maxine. It did have the desired effect. Two birds. Sometimes things just worked out. Assuming I lived through the next several hours, of course. I did not hold the amusement long as I scanned my surroundings. My best shot would be to approach slowly and figure out what the specifics of the situation were before doing anything. But I was past the point of waiting. Every moment Reed had with those kids was one more nail in their coffins. Reed had done considerable damage in the last 12 hours, and I did not believe he was done yet. There comes a time when waiting to see what happens is no longer a good strategy. I was now at that point. There was a reason for the uptick in violence, and my gut told me it had something to do with the children. Perhaps they had started to doubt Reed's lies, so he felt the need to make the attacks more drastic and closer to home. While I might have preferred a slower, cautious approach, after I determined the way was clear, I went forward fast, doing my best to stay in the shadows, but trusting to the element of surprise I gained to make up for my lack of stealth. I covered ground at a quick rate, staying beside a 10-foot brick fence that kept me hidden in the shadows. The eastern sky was starting to lighten, but there was still an hour before sunrise. My anxiety increased with the oncoming daylight. I glanced at my watch but could not read the time in the shadows and wasn't about to press a button for light. I assumed Reed's people were aware that I had hopped the fence. They might believe I was here to gather intel because I was alone. While they thought I was here to spy, I would put a bullet in Reed's brain. The property was vast but well-maintained, and the closer I got to the home, the fewer options I had for hiding, forcing me to slow so I could plot my course to ensure I wouldn't go in a direction that left me without cover. The home was vast with sprawling wings and had several different buildings out back. I would have spent more time trying to figure out what was back there if the black Suburban had not been parked at the front door. Any remaining doubt I was at the wrong place fled when I recognized the same license plate number from before. If Reed and the children weren't here, this was at least the vehicle I had seen them in earlier in the evening. I watched for several minutes trying to determine if there was anybody in the Suburban. The rear-tinted windows kept me from getting a solid view, and I did not have a good angle on the windshield. Cursing under my breath, I shook my head, wondering if I was about to meet my death. The adrenaline that had aided my actions was fading, and reason was beginning to rear its head. If I continued in the frame of mind I was in, I was going to do a lot of damage. Was I okay with that? Unlike with Sam, who had deserved to die, his complicity with the bombing at the old Diagon headquarters was enough to reassure me of that. I did not know anything about anybody here other than Reed and the children. If I continued on my path, I would be faced with life and death decisions. I won't kill if I can avoid it, I thought, as I came out of the shadows and headed straight towards the door. I hoped it would be unlocked because of the Suburban's recent arrival, accomplishing my goals and minimizing my damage. The problem with the mansion was there was no way to tell if somebody was looking out one of the windows, but the enormity of the place cut both ways. As I came out of the shadows, I straightened and held my head high, acting as if I had every right to be here. I forced myself to believe it. If I was spotted, I wanted them to think I was part of the team. I glanced at the Suburban while I moved, hoping there wasn't somebody still in the car. As I strode past it, I kept my eyes forward, even though I just needed one glance to tell if somebody were in either of the front seats. By the time I had placed a foot on the first of the broad steps that could have fit a crowd, I was certain it was empty. My heart froze when a car door opened behind me. I continued up without looking back. Judging by the sound, it was the driver's side door. I berated myself for not circling around and checking. It would have taken time because the landscaping in between the circular driveway was tall enough to obstruct my view. I would have had to get right up to the Suburban to see inside. Stupid, I thought. Stupid, stupid. Frank, word just came down about a possible intruder. He trailed off and I heard static as he pushed the button on a radio. I have eyes on the... By that time I was on him, coming around the front of the vehicle at a full outrun. I ripped the radio from his hands, letting it clatter to the ground. There was an awkward squawk as somebody asked him to identify his location. I grabbed the man by the throat and slammed his head against the hood of the car, refusing to let the sickening crunch touch me. Lights flicked on in a nearby room of the house as I searched the man, finding a pistol I could not identify in the dark as I tossed it over my head and into the bushes. Several full ammo magazines received similar treatment. When I found the Suburban key in his pocket, I felt relief course through me. I had a way out of this mess. The man started to speak, so I banged his head again and threw him to the ground, watching to make sure he didn't get up before moving on. Picking up the radio, I hopped into the Suburban and slammed the door shut. The vehicle started on the first try as I gunned the engine. My takedown of the man had not been quiet. It would not be long before they figured out where I was. The mansion doors opened as the tires squealed. I pulled away and went into the loop of driveway, heading back towards the exit. The first bullet came through the rear window and whizzed by my head. I ducked but kept enough of my eyes above to see as I completed the circle and veered back toward the house, pedal pushed to the floor without reservation. More bullets came sailing through the vehicle, shattering glass and sending debris flying all over the place. The shots were close together, but I was relieved that I had not heard the distinctive rat-a-tat-tat of an automatic weapon. That would have been a very serious problem. The shooters had pistols, which meant two things. One, they would have smaller magazines. Two, The bullets would have less power and would be less likely to harm the engine. I felt the wind of one bullet as it passed my forearm, leaving a stinging sensation I ignored without a second thought. Once I was sure of my destination, I pulled my head down, so I was out of view of the windshield. I hung onto the steering wheel with a grasp of iron and kept the gas pedal on the floor. There was a crunch, and I felt several bumps before I drove up the stairs of the home. The vehicle came to a stop with a loud bang as it crashed into the front doors and sent them flying. As I opened my door and hopped out, the Suburban began to roll back down the stairs, revealing what I'd done. The carnage was horrific. I had run over two men, and the third had ridden the hood all the way up the stairs and had been crushed into the flattened front doors. None of them were moving. The doors had fallen flat onto the marble floor. A swelling of guilt grew in my chest until I forced it away, reminding myself that these men had chosen to work with Reed. Perhaps they were responsible for the bombs, in which case they deserved what they'd gotten. My eye was drawn to movement below me on the stairs. I brought up my pistol and fired without thinking, just as the open door clipped a man who had appeared with his gun aimed at me. The combination of my bullet and the door put him down in a way that made me think he was not going to be getting up again. It was the man I'd attacked before taking the Suburban. Four men, all dead. I climbed the stairs and entered in through the hole where the front doors had hung moments before. And now we're going to be trying something new here. I'm going to be reading the second part of Monkey House. I looked around, thinking somebody else had come onto our property, but even as I did, I knew I was in denial. I'd seen the bear move its mouth. "Hello?" The creature waved the paw in a decidedly human fashion. "I'm right here, pal, talking to you." With great reluctance and wondering if somebody had slipped something into my lunch, I looked at the bear, fumbling for what I might say. I cautiously took another step backward. Was this a sign of dementia? My father had died at 98 with full use of his mental faculties. My grandfather on the other side had reached his mid-80s and had been sharp until the day he died. "I'm sorry," I said carefully, fearing I'd misread the situation. Perhaps this was a badly malformed human. If so, he might understand my surprise. He'd probably received it all the time. My kinder instincts came into play. "You just caught me off guard, hiding behind the lilac bush and all." I smiled wanly. The creature came entirely into the open, revealing that the rest of him did, in fact, look like a bear. The only thing even close to human was its face and the fact it walked on two legs, apparently with ease. "I need to hide," it said. "Do you have some place I can go?" I looked at my house. Even though it looked helpless, I hesitated. Marjorie was off in town, and for most of the night, I was alone. If this creature had malintent, I wanted to make sure my wife wasn't left wondering what had happened to me. "What are you hiding from?" I asked. As I asked the question, I looked at my watch and noticed there were only a few minutes of daylight left. The sky still had plenty of light, so it was difficult to conceive that 20 minutes from now it would be dark. I rarely had, if ever, noticed the setting sun in the city. "You don't want to know," he said. At least I was starting to think of it as a he. I avoided looking between his legs to determine gender. It seemed the polite thing to do, even though it appeared to be mostly animal. "Trust me, it really is better you don't know." I shook my head. "I'm not one who's opposed to giving a little help, but this is sudden, and I'd rather like to know what I'm getting into, if you wouldn't mind." I strained my mind to be polite to the creature, but it seemed the civil thing to do. He nodded in a distinctly human fashion, making my other desires for empathy want to kick in even more. Perhaps I had been too quick to judge. He could think and speak. If I were put under oath, I would have to testify he seemed self-aware. A howl cut through the warm evening air, and it was like the little ball of fur had been hit with a jolt of lightning. He bounded up and turned, sniffing the air while turning and looking every which way. "She let them out already?" He shook his head. "Oh man, this is not good. This is not good. She never lets them out before sunset. Never. I thought I had more time." "There's nothing to worry about," I said, assuming he was afraid of the wolves. "I have not had any problems since they were reintroduced." The fuzzball shook his head, reminding me of an earnest little boy. "Dang it all," I could imagine Marjorie saying, her voice brooking no discussion. "Some half-beast thing shows up on our property, and you start assigning human emotions to it." "Listen, listen," Fuzzball said. his voice turning into a high-pitched squeak. "Those are not wolves, and we need to get inside." Again, that was another excerpt from Monkey House. I am planning to read it in full here after the Jake Ramsey section of the podcast. And you can also find it on Amazon.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.